The gurus of How To are here, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And they visit us once a month to answer your questions on home repair issues. We take your calls at 212-433-9692. And you can also leave comments on our show page at WNYC.org. There's also a little quiz every time they visit us. Last time you were here,
unfortunately,
nobody got the answer.
I say it's unfortunate. I like people to answer the question.
You know, I want some kind of a balance. I like it when 20 people get it wrong and then the 21st person gets it right. It's a disappointment to me if the first person gets it right, and it's a disappointment if nobody gets it right.
Right.
And the funny thing is when he comes into my office and gives me the word, I go, two calls. I can tell, two calls. This one, he comes in, I go, it's going to go 2 weeks. Because you can tell by the clue of how easy it will be for someone to Google it while they're listening to us.
Okay. Can I read it this time?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Maybe that'll be good luck. What is the architectural name given to an arch or vault in a thick, heavy wall, which in turn supports the full load of the wall above and has at least two different sets of arches, especially over a window or a doorway? And this is not what were some of the things they came up with last time?
Well, they came up with arches. They came up with
lintels.
They came up with spandrel. They came up with a few other things. But
so it's not any of those?
No.
Okay. Now, we'll be taking calls in just a moment. But this is an interesting time of year. Suddenly we've hit real serious cold.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always talking about saving money while we keep our places warm.
Yes.
How do we do that other than turn the radiator up to the hottest possible?
But one of the things that we really found.
Well, first of all, there's a misnomer. You don't turn the radiator up at all. You turn the thermostat up, or you turn the thermostat down. You shut the radiator. You turn the radiator on or off.
Well, I turn that little valve.
Well, if you have a steam system and it's a one-pipe steam and you only turn it halfway, you're going to get a lot of banging. Well,
but you have to understand that this is a city. This is a
They say the New York thermostat is you open the window.
That's right. That's the New York thermostat. Because this is a city of apartment houses, and we see on a daily basis during this cold weather, year after year, that the heat that the landlord or the super gives to the building is sometimes over in abundance, and yet at the same time they cry that they're not making enough money. It's the money that they're going out the window instead of into their bank, and that tenants can't tolerate cold weather, but they can't tolerate overabundance of heat in their apartment.
Now, a listener has written in about this. She, mm-hmm. Aisa in New Jersey, said, "What's the lowest safe temperature to set the thermostat? I set it at 50 degrees when I'm not at home. Is that
okay?"
And that
is perfectly okay. Usually the minimum temperature will be preset on the thermostat already, and it won't allow you to set it lower than 45. And 45 is still okay. A lot of heating people will say, well, that might cause condensation or might, you know. But my feeling is that 50 degrees, like for instance, my house, we were talking about this last summer about a remote control thermostat that I can use through the internet. Well, when I'm not home, I set it at 55, and when I'm about to come home, actually, it takes almost 2 or 3 hours to get it back up to the temperature I want. But I set it at 55. My sister and brother-in-law have a house up in the country. They set it at 50 when they're not home.
Wait. So 55. You have some special device that allows you to turn it back up on your way home. But for the rest of us, that means 2 hours of sitting in cold with sweaters on waiting for the temperature to get normal.
But that's not really all of us, because if your schedule is actually very consistent, you can get a setback thermostat. So when you're not home, it'll set this temperature down, and it knows that you're going to be home at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and it will start bringing it up. And the thermostat by Honeywell, one of the ones, the digital ones they make, has a memory in it, and it actually learns how long it takes to bring the temperature up.
Are we being cruel to our cats when we do this?
It depends if you shave them or
well,
not.
Well, I'll tell you something. Let's understand cats and dogs. They are really originally wild animals, and they acclimate to the heat. They have fur on their body. We don't have that much fur. Some of us, Lenny Lopez has a little fur on his face, but that's besides.
And you haven't seen me without a shirt on.
Yes.
Arr!
But But also, as far as temperature is concerned, it has to do with the age of the person. Older people need more temperature because their metabolism can't build up heat enough in order to make them comfortable. Younger people need a lower temperature, especially when they're sleeping. It's more comfortable and healthy to sleep in a cooler bedroom. But the point that I tried to make up originally is that the managing agents of these buildings around the city are wasting so much energy by permitting the tenants to open up the windows. Now, they can't go around to each tenant and tell them to close their windows. That's ridiculous. But what they are afraid of doing is hiring a technician that can come in and figure out the best way to control the heat in that building. And in some of these buildings, it costs like over thousands of dollars a day to heat up a building, maybe even more. And I don't think a technician, I believe that a technician will come in and whatever they charge, you'll get your money back the first season like a shot. No question about it. Now, and you'll be environmentally in the right pocket.
Ah. We have already received a number of calls with answers to the quiz. Should we go through them?
Sure.
Be my pleasure.
Okay. Suzanne from Chatham, New Jersey. What do you think? Chatham, what do you think it is?
Flying buttress.
No, that was one of the ones from last month also.
Yes, that's a flying buttress you find in a church and something like that, which supports supports the roof of a building and everything else.
The whole wall, doesn't it? It's something to keep the side of the church.
Well, the wall is the fulcrum of the flying buttress that supports the roof that's over the building, and then the other balance mechanism is on the outside. So the buttress is the load.
In other words, you wouldn't need the buttress if there wasn't a roof.
That's
but
right.
But this looks like an arch. Arch inside of an arch for creating a window.
That's right. Creating a window and also a decorative kind of entryway into like a corridor or a hallway where a door is.
Actually, you have this configuration at St. Patrick's Cathedral because there's an arch. There's an opening arch on the front, and then you walk through a section before the doors, and there's another arch there.
And that supports the whole business above.
So this is not just decorative. This is actually structural?
Structural element.
Okay, let's take another suggestion. Gay from Brooklyn, what do you think it is?
Keystone.
Well, the keystone of the arch is the point where all the load is concentrating on the top of the arch, and that's just a single element of the arch itself. And this is found both in Gothic arches and Roman arches and any kind of arch. It's the last piece that's put into place when the arch is built.
So, in fact, many people thought it was one of the great inventions of the Romans.
Well,
no? Okay.
We're going more with the viaduct. With the viaduct and
well,
the
I
aqueducts.
Don't know. I
viaduct?
Asked. Viaduct?
Why not a chicken?
Okay. Is it Abby?
Yes, hi.
What do you think it is?
I think it's a groin.
Groin is the part that is at the spring line of an arch. And that's a little bit different kind of element.
Thank you for your call. Kathy from Massapequa, what do you think it is?
I think it's a corbelled Roman arch.
The corbelled Roman arch is a part of masonry that cantilevers out from the face of a building and the arch is built on top of it or behind it. And corbelling is a way of placing stones and bricks into a building.
So no.
The answer is no. Margarita from Queens.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. What do you think it is?
Is it pendentive?
No.
Okay.
What is pendentive?
That's also a part that sticks out from a building, like almost to hold flower boxes and stuff like that. It's almost like not quite a gurgle, but part of a structural element to support something decorative.
We're going to take a little break in a moment, and then we'll take calls from listeners who have problems. And maybe somebody will even come up with an answer. Just one more thing. I've been seeing a lot of Christmas trees out in the street now. Is it dangerous if you haven't put it outside
yet? I'll tell you something. By this time, if you haven't taken your Christmas tree out of your house, you have a firebomb that is about to blow. anybody that has a Christmas tree right now, especially with all the heat that you're putting into the building, you're drying out that tree, and that tree is worse than tinder. The slightest spark from the lights that you may have it, or even a static electric charge that may take place because you have relatively low humidity at this time, could ignite that tree. Right now, that tree has to be in the street.
We will be taking your calls at 212-433-9692 as we continue with the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. But first, as they say in commercial broadcasting, these important announcements. We're back with the gurus of how to, and your calls to 212-433-9692. Before we get to the calls, there are also people who've left comments on our show page. This one is Drawer in Bergen County. She said, I'm using Benjamin Moore's semi-gloss Natura low emission paint. The color I chose is quite a bit darker than my current color, light yellow, also semi-gloss. The results are pathetic, splotchy, uneven, and in places where I spackled the wall, much darker than the general areas. What can I do at this point?
Well, it seems to me that she didn't use a primer.
The primer is the most important thing about getting a consistent color, especially when you're spackling over something, because the spackle compound has a high ability for and porosity that draws in any of the paint. So what happens is it takes away some of the luster of the paint. So it requires at least two coats of paint. But the best thing to do is over freshly spackled areas, it's good to use aluminum paint. That's really the best undercoat that you could do.
Use aluminum paint over any stains as well.
Yes, it prevents it from bleeding through, and it also prevents the underlayment of the paint of the material from sucking the resins or the solvent out of the paint, which changes the color.
But if she did it with the latex paint to begin with, what you might want to do now is just really start all over again.
Prime
the wall, and then paint it the color that you want.
Yes.
Now, Gay had the wrong answer, but she also had a question, and I moved on. Should I give her another chance?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Okay,
go
Gay,
ahead.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
About that.
Do I have a problem?
Gay.
Yes.
Yeah, hang on a second. Well, will you finish what you were saying?
Anybody wants to answer a question is really paramount on this show.
Oh, yeah. So, Gay,
what's
up?
I hope that reassures you, Gay.
Okay.
Well, in the process of watering a poinsettia, I missed the poinsettia and hit my the top of my Art Deco bar, which was brought from Paris and has been sitting in my living room for 20 years, perfectly fine. Except that I didn't see the water, and it laid there for a day. I came back.
So it's a wood top, right?
It's a veneer top. It's a traditional Art Deco veneer piece.
And you got like a white stain on it? Is that it?
Yep, you do. I sure did.
White ring stain. Let me do something really simple and see if it works. Have you got some margarine or butter in the refrigerator?
I do.
Why don't you rub it right over that spot and let it stay for a little
now,
while?
Does this matter whether it's salt butter sweet butter?
Does it have to be like organic butter?
Plugra.
Any kind of butter.
Does it have to be cold butter or warm butter?
Yeah, rub it.
No, it could be cold butter.
Rub it on that spot, let it stay for a little while, and then take a soft cloth and wipe it off. I'm afraid to use any kind of a solvent like alcohol or something like that because I don't know what the finish is. If the finish is a shellac finish, you'll ruin everything. If it is a...
Wait a minute. Before I touch it with the butter...
The butter will not hurt anything.
Okay.
The butter will make... Just clean it
butter
off.
Butter makes everything taste
yeah,
better.
Just
don't
take
you know
off
that?
The butter. Let it sit there for about a half... About 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and then wipe it all off. And if the white stain is still there, the next stop I would do is take a a little bit of alcohol, a very tiny bit of alcohol on a sponge or something like a soft, like chamois type of material, and just give it a really quick brush over it. If it disappears, then you're on the right track, and the next time do another little bit of butter.
How about wax?
Sometimes the wax will seal it, that white residue, into, and you'll see it. Because it'll only give a coating on top
and
of it.
And, Gay, just one other thing.
Yes, yes.
If you need to do follow-up, or anybody needs to follow up on questions, the thing to do is write Larry at Ubell, UBELL.com. But make sure you include a phone number, because he's not going to answer by email, okay?
Yeah, but there's also on AccurateBuilding.com's site, there
Wait, I got to grab a pen here. AccurateBuilding.com?
Right. Yeah.
On AccurateBuilding.com website, there is a whole bunch of stuff about painting and how to, when you have blemishes and how to relieve them. There is a whole series of Family Circle articles that I wrote, and gives you charts on what to do and what not to do.
Because Gay's problem is not unique.
No, it's not unique.
It's not unique at all.
It happens in my own. When some company comes over, they leave a cup, a glass of champagne, and all of a sudden there's a ring.
You treat your company nicely. I'm going to have to come over. Paul from Somerset, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
What's up, Paul?
Paul?
Yeah. I'm here at a friend's house in Bridgewater, and they have these wooden frame houses with the 2x4s and very easily built house. And he's got a lot of books and a lot of papers and so on. And how do you know what the capacity is of the floor so the second floor doesn't fall on the first?
Well, if buildings are generally built and there's a partition on that particular area and the bookcase is against the wall, directly underneath that partition, it's usually the framing is built up to support the partition and itself. So usually areas around partitions are usually stronger than something that's in the middle of the floor if it's a regular wood frame building. Also, if the bookcases are running perpendicular to the joists below, usually the load is spread out throughout the floor area, and it would take almost a bulldozer to crush that section of the wall.
But the other thing is if you think there's an issue, underneath you would look, and if there's any cracking of the drywall or the plaster, then that tells you there's movement. If there's no significant cracking, then in that case, the floor really hasn't moved.
Absolutely.
Now, we've got to be talking about a ton of material there. And also, you have to realize when a lot of these buildings go up, a lot of times that the contractors will dump a load of drywall in one corner of the building, and the pile of drywall could be a few tons
weight.
Now, if you think that what you have sitting in that room is over a ton or two, then maybe you have some issues. But you really have to look at if you took a room and you filled it up with people, and each person weighs approximately 150 to 200 pounds, and you put 10 people in the room, that's a lot of weight you have to say. That's 2,000 pounds of people.
But most residential buildings are built at about 35 pounds per square foot. But if you have to take the entire floor area and then multiply it by 35, and then you get the actual capacity of that floor area.
Okay, I hope that answers
your
question.
But I don't think it should be a problem.
Jen from Westchester, you're on the air.
Hello, Jen.
Hi.
What's up?
So I live in an old Victorian, and I have two problems that are killing us. We have this space underneath our bathroom that was an addition.
Mm-hmm. And it's freezing.
It's freezing. And my husband, he got one of these thermal guns and is trying to find where all the air is coming in from, but we can't figure it out.
It also might not be air coming in. It might be such a great heat loss that it's sucking the heat out. Okay.
Or there is no supply heat going in.
Well, first of all, do you have a radiator in this bathroom?
Right. There's a radiator in the bathroom.
Well, one of the things you might want to try doing is actually insulating the area below and putting some heat in there.
Below the bathroom.
Yeah, put a radiator in there to keep that area warm, and then that'll warm up the floor, and the heat from the area underneath will eventually rise up into the bathroom anyway.
Well, it's not the bathroom that's cold. The rest of the house gets cold from this air that's coming in from the bathroom.
Well, that kind of condition, in order to really analyze that kind of condition, one who understands how heat is dissipated in a building would have to look at the configuration, because there may be other factors that are taking place other than heat loss through an opening. Maybe that there is no heat migrating into that area. So it's a little tricky, and you have to really get somebody who
is like asking a doctor to do a diagnosis without giving him the x-rays.
Yeah, or doing a telephone diagnosis.
But if you want
it's very difficult.
But if you want to, in lieu of actually paying someone to come out and take a look, if you want to just take a bunch of pictures of the environment and then send them to me at larry@ubell.com, I will take a look at the pictures and see what we can come up with.
And thank you for your call.
Okay.
We go
but that one's a hard one to analyze from here.
Susan from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Yolo.
Hi, Susan.
You know, we're on a slight delay, and Susan, you got to run to your phone, otherwise I'm going to move to another call.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
We lost Susan.
And I thought Susan's question was interesting. It had to do with the smell that's emitted by a plug-in radiator because they smell like something is burning.
Well, that, what happens is if you have an electric radiator, whether it be oil or oil migration or oil circulating unit or even a fan or a heat coil, if they lie around for a long time, they pick up the particulate dust and dirt and lies on the elements. And when these elements get heated up by the coils, they give off like a burning hair kind of smell. And the units have to be on for maybe about a few hours until that odor dissipates. But this is not an unusual. People who put those radiators away for the summertime should really cover them over with some plastic so no dirt gets into those units.
But if you do have an oil leak, that could be burning off. And if that's the issue, then you have to
replace
it. You've
got to throw that unit out.
Or replace it.
Throw it out and replace it.
Barbara from... Yes. What? First you throw it out.
I try to be a little bit more technical. He goes, you got to get rid of it. I'm saying you have to replace it. I think it just sounds
Barbara
a little
from
nicer.
Queens, tell you on the air.
Nice to speak to you.
What's up?
I live on the top floor of an apartment building, and there are two turbine spinners on the roof over my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
They've become very noisy. What can be done to quiet them?
Are they just the kind that look like basically they just spin there when the wind goes by?
I think they spin all the time. Well,
I mean, do they spin because they're connected to an electric motor, or they spin by just... are they connected to an electric motor? That's the question.
No, they're not.
Okay. The bearings that are in them have broken, and the landlord has to replace the bearings or the vents themselves.
The bearings or the vents?
Well, no, bearings and the vents.
Well, if they can take it apart and pull the bearing out and replace it with a new bearing, then that's all they need to replace. If they can't replace the bearing, then the whole vent will have to be replaced.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, those are interesting types. They're called wind turbines, and they spin around all the time, and they get worn out after about 20 years, you know?
Well, these were replaced a year ago, and they're worse than the old ones.
Well, then he probably got a very cheap one.
Or he just didn't assemble it correctly.
That
happens also.
We have a lot of people calling in with what they think is the answer to the quiz.
We just bang through them and
what is the architectural name given to an arch or vault in a thick, heavy wall, which in turn supports the full load of the wall above and has at least two different sets of arches, especially over a window or doorway? And if you understand what that means, you'll probably get the answer. I can't follow that. Okay.
And you even have a picture in front of you.
He has a picture.
And I know the answer because you gave it to me.
And it still doesn't help.
Jim,
what do you think it is?
A relieving or discharging arch.
No. Next.
No.
Okay. Thank you so much. Now, Frank from New Jersey, what do you think it is?
This answer just popped in my head. I don't know why. Is it a portico?
No.
Portico is a roof.
No. No explanations. We got to get through these.
Go ahead.
Okay. Joanne from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It's a catenary arch.
No.
Nope. That's not it either.
I don't know what that is. Corey from Manhattan.
An archivolt.
Would you say an oigavolt? Oh my god!
Archivolt, archivolt. Sometimes with an e on it, depending upon which language you're in.
No. Sorry.
We have Granville from Norwalk, Connecticut. Hi. What do you think it is?
What do you think it is, Granville?
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think it is, Granville?
I think it's vault.
No.
Vault. V-A-U-L-T.
It is a type of vault. I'll give you that, but that's not the answer.
Okay, well, thank you for your calls. Is this going to go for a third month?
No, I think we should give it to
no,
them.
No, not yet.
Give people a little bit longer.
We'll have a vote.
No, Jerry from the Upper West Side, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, hi.
Yes.
A question. Squeaking floor.
Oh, yes.
How does one fix that?
Well, squeaking floors. I think I know the answer.
I think we'll let Lenny take this one.
Yeah. He give it to him.
I think that what you got to do is these are wooden floors, right?
Yes.
With spaces between the slats, right?
Pardon me?
With spaces between the slats,
space. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah, there are strips of wood. Right. How about putting some talcum powder in the spaces between the pieces of wood?
Well, what I recommend is you sprinkle talcum powder over the floor, and then you take a broom and you brush it back and forth so it goes into the cracks, and then let it sit there for about a couple of days, and then sweep up all the residue with a vacuum cleaner or something like that, and in about a week or so, the cracks probably will disappear.
Also, tap the floor a little with the other end of the broom to get it into the crack.
It goes down to the bottom.
And the talcum powder will act as a kind of a cushion.
As a lubricant.
And a lubricant.
As a lubricant,
yeah. But don't use butter, whatever you do.
Yeah.
No butter.
Okay?
Okay,
thank you. We have a number of other questions that people have written in. Bob left a question. He says, I have a Honeywell thermostat. Those old one top is a dial. Mm-hmm. Bottom is a thermometer. Can I replace it with a digital programmable one from the same brand, or the new one? Does the new one require a different set of wires and signals?
No. Are you going to let me answer any questions today?
Well, that was in unison.
Well, I'm just trying to get maybe one question in.
Go ahead.
No, actually, the wiring is pretty consistent from it hasn't really changed. There's usually on a heating system, there's a red wire and a white wire, and if you just follow where the old terminal came off from and put it onto the terminal, the new one, it will go together just fine, and you shouldn't have any problems. Next.
Okay, a couple of answers. Jonas from Brooklyn.
What up, Jonas?
Hello there. I think it might be a barrel vault.
No.
Nope.
Bob from New York.
Yeah, hi. Is it an OG arch?
OG arch? No.
That OG, he's been doing crossword puzzles, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a double reverse curve.
Okay.
OG is a molding kind of shape. Go ahead.
OG, that one was wrong. Roman, this is Bill from the Bronx.
What up, Bill?
Hi. I was listening to the radio in the background and didn't even hear you repeat the question, but I thought I remembered it from last month.
Yes, and?
And I thought it might be a Roman arch.
No.
No. We mentioned that several times already.
Cynthia from the East Village.
Hi. I'm wondering, is it a jam, a J-A-M-B, like a curb jam?
No.
No.
But thanks for listening.
Melinda from Greenwich Village.
Hi. Is it an architrave?
No, that's not that.
No.
Jason from New York.
Is it Lancet Arch?
No.
But I love that everyone's like really participating.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, I'm excited.
Yes.
Larry from Dumont, New Jersey.
What? Could it be a knave?
No.
No.
A knave is
neither inside. A hero that's, nor a knave.
That's inside of a church kind of a device, architectural element.
Well, we're pretty much out of time. Should I try to sneak one more in here?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, this person writes, my old plaster ceiling was torn out and replaced with drywall. I had the contractor put up homosote before putting up the drywall, but now the sound coming through the upstairs apartment is just horrible. I can hear my neighbor even when he's having a normal conversation. What can I do to reduce the amount of sound coming through the ceiling, and why didn't the homosote work?
Well, the homosote is like a cardboard kind of thing. It has an insulating value, a sound insulating value, but it depends upon how thick it is and how it's suspended and how it's tied in. If it is very rigid,
what does he do? We have 10 seconds.
You have 10 seconds. You have to put in maybe another layer of homosote and put it in loosely, not tight.
Or even hang the ceiling.
Now the gurus are going to be back on February 10th. When? What will happen?
We will go forth, get all of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut to show them how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.